Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we're going to be looking at an early comedic performance by William Shatner in the feature film Loaded Weapon 1.
Yes.
But first, let's get into some Discovery news, shall we?
Let's do it, man, because there is some Discovery news. People have been talking.
Big week, big week. First off, one little brief note. There is another writer on staff who...
Oh, yes.
We knew that he was involved, but we didn't know in what capacity exactly, you know? Not that anyone was keeping it secret. It's just, you know, whatever.
Right.
Anyway, you gotta take this information as it comes, you know?
Yeah.
Sean Cochran is writing for the show. And Sean Cochran has no screenwriting credits to date, but he was an assistant for Berg and Harberts on a lot of their earlier shows, including Mercy and I think Revenge and some other stuff. So
there you go.
You know, he's been learning from the bosses, and now it's his chance to shine. And
they continue assembling their team. Mm-hmm. Their crack team.
Mm-hmm. And I think I was a little hasty in my assumption that Craig Sweeney was no longer involved. I'm pretty sure he is involved. But whatever, it doesn't matter. Okay. Big news.
Yes.
See, it's like there's news which should be... It does. Okay. Let's start with this. We'll go in chronological order. Rainn Wilson has joined the cast as Harry Mudd.
I love it.
Okay. I'm very. You've been off the grid, right?
I have.
So
I've been like Kevin Flynn. I'm living in the machine, but not connected to the machine.
When I heard the news, I anticipated the reaction online, and my anticipation of the reaction online was very different from the actual reaction online.
What was the actual reaction online?
Well, what was your reaction?
My reaction was, that's great casting. Even if he's only there for an episode, it's funny. It's a fun. It shows that they're going to have some sort of sense of fun and acknowledgement of, you know, stuff that people have enjoyed, and probably they'll do something a little bit different with it. But it, you know, if you're gonna have Harry Mudd as a character, you pick the right guy to cast as it.
Okay. Yeah. My reaction was good casting. You know, I really do like Rainn Wilson. You know, I haven't seen much of The Office, to be honest, although I did watch the pilot after this.
I've watched a little bit of The Office, but he will forever be buried in a special part of my brain that I try not to revisit from seeing House of a Thousand Corpses.
Mm, okay.
Which he was in that film, and I remember everybody in that film, but I try not to because that film is extremely... Have you ever seen it?
No, I want to.
It's very disturbing.
Yeah.
I feel almost like I need to force you to watch it because he's in it.
No, I mean, I want to see it. You know, I like Rob Zombie. You know, I was a big fan of his Halloween remake. Mm. And I like his music videos. I like his music. And did you ever see the commercial that he did for, I think it was Clorox?
I think so, but I can't remember. Like, it sounds like something I saw, but I don't remember what happened in it. Like, you know, it's like a vague recollection that, oh yeah, that happened, but I don't remember what happened in it.
It's got this typical Rob Zombie sort of like Texas Chainsaw Massacre aesthetic where this guy is like torturing clothes, you know?
Oh yeah, okay.
And they're saying like, you know, use Clorox because it's easy on your clothes. But regardless, I don't know. The thing that I always think of Rainn Wilson from is like the one scene that he's in a movie that you just saw, Untitled, aka Almost Famous.
He's in a couple of scenes. He doesn't say much, but he's like, there's one scene where he's sitting there just smoking.
Right. Yeah. He's like dark, mysterious, you know, when they're like reading the copy, you know,
and he's really good.
Yeah. So I like him in that. And of course, he was in Galaxy Quest as one of the aliens.
Oh, that's right.
Which is everybody's right. favorite Star Trek movie.
Yeah. Well, not everybody's. Nah, but it's a good one.
I agree. So that's kind of cool. Yeah, my thinking was like, yes, that's good casting for Harry Mudd. And then I was also thinking like, that's interesting how they're, you know, bringing in another character. And I also thought, this is so weird that, I mean, like, of all the characters from the original series to pull in for what, in my mind, based on basically no information, I imagine Discovery to be, like, I'm like, how does Harry Mudd fit? How does that work? It seems so tonally different from everything else that they're doing. It's like, are they going to do a wacky comedy episode? That's bizarre. I mean, I'm down for that, but it's bizarre.
But regardless of whether it's wacky comedy or funny or what have you, at the very least, you know, it would be very interesting to see modern writers approach Harry Mudd and what spin they would put on it, what sort of commentary they would put on it with what he is known for.
Well, that's where, you know, the Twitter, you know, and other public reaction, you know, comes into play, which is something that I was not expecting at all, because, like, my impression of Harry Mudd in terms of the general public's reaction to him is something along the lines of, I get the impression that people, I got the impression that people liked him. He was a beloved supporting character from the original series. That's why he was on two episodes and an episode of the animated series. And, you know, I thought, like, people were like, hey, his episodes are fun. You know, we enjoy watching him. Whereas yeah. my reaction to Harry Mudd is basically like, this character's kind of boring. Those episodes are kind of boring. You know, I'm never going to be like, yeah, Mudd's women's on, woohoo,
well,
you know, or anything like that.
I think that nostalgia, you know, seeing Harry Mudd when you're very young, like you remember it because, you know, he's played with such, mm-hmm. you know, vigor yeah. and such, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And I think that over time, like if you were to come to Harry Mudd cold now versus when you saw him when you were younger, your reaction to him would be different. I think that your reaction to him would be more in line with yours, where it's like, I get what you guys are doing, but this is kind of, ugh, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah. when you're younger, it's kind of like, oh, that's funny, the guy with the mustache, and hey, you know, and balding, you know.
Yes. But the reaction online was very different from what I thought it would be. The reaction to this news online was something along the lines of, what the hell are they doing? How dare they put Harry Mudd in a Star Trek show which is made in 2017? This show just jumped the shark. I can't believe that they would tarnish, you know, the modern day Trek. You know, this is completely backwards. That character is extremely misogynistic. I mean, to which my response was like, yeah, right? I mean, like, that. His name is Harry Mudd. You know, well, like, everyone on the show is yeah. like, dude, you need to, you know, back off. Like, he's not, like, the lovable protagonist or anything.
No.
He's always, like, you know?
What he is he's like a Falstaff character, where uh-huh. when you first are getting to know him, you're kind of like, oh, he's, yeah, okay, yeah, I get it, Harry. And then you learn about him, you're like, how do you live like this? What is wrong with you?
Right.
I mean, like, it's not like the original Trek was even, like, loving with him. Like,
no.
The both yeah. episodes he's in, they're condemning him.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, all three episodes they're in, they're condemning yes. him, because, you know, you got to include the animated series.
For sure.
But it's not like at the end of the episode they're all laughing and they're like, oh, we should be more like Harry. No,
yeah,
they're
I
all
wish,
like,
I
this
wish
guy
Harry
sucks.
Mudd would come back next week, you know?
Right.
No,
right.
I mean, it's definitely like an antagonistic character. And I think that, you know, to say like, he's too misogynistic for 2017 is sort of to overlook the value of having a character like that in a modern day story, which
right.
is to comment on misogyny, you know?
Right.
Like, I can't imagine them being like, oh, Harry Mudd, he's so lovable. We love how misogynistic he is. No.
Right.
They're going to be like, oh, God, this guy, he's terrible, you know? And maybe
right.
they're going to do it in a comedic way. And that's fine, because, you know, comedy is really good. I mean, it's obviously one of the best forms of social commentary out there.
But there's the added thing that I think that makes him an interesting character is that he is legitimately dense enough not to get it. He doesn't, like, everybody else can stand outside him and say, how do you not see what's wrong mm-hmm. with this? And that's what makes him, I guess, you know, for lack of a better term, funny in a way, because you look at him and you say, okay, well, no, this is right. absurd that anybody would think that this is okay.
Yeah, he's a funny character, but it's not like, you know, he's Don Rickles or something telling right. jokes and you're like, wah-ha-ha, Harry Mudd, that was a good one. You're laughing at him, not with him. What?
Very interesting place you went to reference humor was Don Rickles.
That's the place I always go to because that's where they go in Reservoir Dogs with it. Although I do think that Don Rickles is a very funny individual.
Oh, and
if you've never seen John Landis's Don Rickles documentary, I highly recommend it.
I would like to see it, but I will say that he's actually had some great dramatic turns as well, because he was great in Casino and he was also great in a movie we watched recently, Run Silent, Run Deep.
Yeah, it's true.
So there you go.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know, it's very strange. The reaction to Harry Mudd is very strange. I never in a million years thought that I was going to be falling on the pro Harry Mudd side based on like the overall reaction to the character. I thought everyone was going to be like, yeah, Harry Mudd. And I was going to be like, you know, that character's kind of boring, right? You know, but right. no, I'm apparently much more accepting of the use of this character than everyone else on the internet. So,
well, I think that there's, I think it will mark what I think you could look at it as a positive from, absolutely, is that it's maybe a return to some more subtle form of commentary than beating you over the head. Because, you know, I mean, like, Next Generation was a great show when it was great, but it also at times had a tendency to sort of like beat you over the head and have a character stop and say, this is why this is wrong. Whereas it's like, it's okay sometimes just to have the character and nudge the audience along and just say, all right, let's think about this. What's wrong with Harry Mudd? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you might even not notice it until at the end of the episode where you're like, oh, Harry Mudd, well, no, that's not funny at all, is it? You know, like it's okay to do it that way.
Yeah. It'll be really interesting to see how they do it. But yeah, I'm okay with it. And Rainn Wilson, you know, getting back to the point, I guess, I think is more than capable of pulling that off.
Agreed.
I do wonder, and I don't really wonder because I know it's not going to happen, but I do... wish, I don't even wish, because I know it's not going to happen, but, you know, there's a whole storyline in that comic book that takes place right before Into Darkness that involves Harry Mudd's half-Bajoran daughter, which they reference in Into Darkness. It'd be cool if they brought that in somehow. I mean, they won't, but it would be cool if they did.
That'd be neat. Yeah.
Yeah. Regardless. All right. So now the other big news. Sonequa Martin-Green is confirmed for the lead in this here show. She is playing the first officer, whose name is Michael Burnham.
Yes.
Which, you know, everyone's like, Michael Burnham? What could that mean?
Right.
It could mean a lot of things. I honestly don't think it's going to mean anything other than her name is Michael, you know?
Right.
I mean, I've heard, you know, Michael used as a woman's name, right? Michael Sneed.
I think that there is, it's an announcement, and this is what the character is named. Let's not get ahead of ourselves and try to write the show too much before it actually happens. You know, like, it's okay to say, oh, well, that's interesting. I wouldn't have expected the character to be named such a thing, but what are they going to do with that? It's one thing to like sort of speculate and wonder, but I think that some of the reaction can very easily be a presumption about what that means. And it's like, you know, we don't have to get in the presumption game necessarily. We can speculate, we can talk about, but, you know, this is an actress. This is what her character name is. Okay. That's the only information I have.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I think the thing that people are, you know, wondering is like, well, is it like a trans character, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, something says to me, like, if that were the case, like, we would know, you know? I mean, that would have leaked out for sure,
I
right?
I think that the casting would have been done in such a way as to remove the speculation about that.
Yeah.
Is how I
mean, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, that is, it is possible. And, you know, I was mentioning this to, like, in our private chat on whatever, that, you know, when I saw Rod Roddenberry and Trevor Roth in Vegas and they were talking about the show, this is very early on, you know, and some people were bringing up, you know, like concerns or whatever about, you know, representation. The way that they were talking really, really made it sound like there was going to be a trans character on the show, to me anyway. But that was just me purely speculating. But I don't know. I really think we would have heard about that by now if it were the case.
Would have been hard to keep it under wraps, I think. And I do honestly think that the casting would have been different.
Yeah.
If that were the case.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But it was cool. I don't know. I did see a picture, you know, of her when she was on The Talking Dead, the Walking Dead follow-up show the night before the announcement. And, you know, some people, like, on the Babel conference are talking about how her hairdo is in this, like, very tall bun and, you know, very reminiscent of, you know, kind of an original series hairdo, which is kind of cool. And she did, I guess as she was signing off or whatever on the show, she did give a Vulcan salute, which is pretty...
That's pretty, cool. pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That is pretty great.
So that's a real thing. Sonequa Martin-Green. I mean, everyone knew, but, you know, whatever. Like, even in the press release, they're like, well, this is the worst kept secret, you know, in the world. But it's true.
Yeah.
So there's that. All right, so that's the news for this week. Should we move on to our feature presentation?
Oh, let's move on to our feature presentation, National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon 1.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, okay, this is a movie that came out in 1993, so just after The Undiscovered Country, when
yes.
you think about it. And it stars Emilio Estevez and Samuel L. Jackson, and features performances by a lot of Star Trek people, actually. Most notably, of course, William Shatner, who plays the big bad guy. But there are also cameos by Whoopi Goldberg, James Doohan as basically Scotty, and, you know, a few other people here and there who've shown up. F. Murray Abraham. So.
Oh, that's right. You know what? I'd forgotten about that until you said it. F. Murray Abraham. That's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, do you want to give a synopsis of this movie?
Lethal Weapon, but done as a parody movie in the style of some of those movies that you've seen lately that are like Scary Movie or something like that, where they're really parodying a lot of different movies, but the main thread is a parody of one specific type of movie.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. In this case, the very popular buddy cop genre, as best personified by Lethal Weapon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So is this your first time seeing it?
No, I've seen it once before. Here's my history with the movie. When it came out in 1993, I was 13 years old, and I remember this. I was on vacation in Disney World, and I remember sitting in a hotel room and seeing a clip of this movie on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. They showed basically the first scene of the movie in the convenience store.
Yes. Yes.
And even though this is not at all my type of humor and wasn't my type of humor back in 1993 either, for whatever reason, 13-year-old me thought that that was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And I could not stop laughing. Okay. And it was one of those movies where I basically didn't watch movies when I was a kid, but I kind of like earmarked it in my memory and knew that one day I would go back and watch Loaded Weapon 1. And, you know, that day, I knew it would come. You know, there's a few movies like that to this day. You know, My Cousin Vinny is a movie which, you know, when I saw the commercials when it first came out, I'm like, I think I might want to see that movie when I'm older. And I still do want to see it. Yeah. I haven't gotten around to it yet. But Loaded Weapon 1, its time came when Laserdisc's time ended, RIP Laserdisc. And there was a store downtown called the Crow's Nest, which was amazing. And they had this huge Laserdisc selection. And basically, they decided to start selling all of their Laserdiscs for $10 a piece. Nice. And they had a copy of Loaded Weapon 1. And I'm like, now is my time, you know? So I bought it and I watched it. And then I watched it again a couple days ago.
There you go. There you go. So, yeah, I saw it in the movie theater. And it was goofy and stupid, but I laughed. And so I always, and it was honestly, the first time I can recall being in a movie theater and seeing Bill Shatner, like Bill Shatner was the funny bad guy. I was like, yeah. Oh, hey, look at that. Yeah, no, yeah, he can do humor pretty darn well. That's right.
Yeah.
And he did humor pretty darn well.
Yeah.
And then I think I watched it like once after that sometime over the years, and then I rewatched it for this. So
it's like two times, well, maybe three times for you, two times for me.
Yes.
So how does it hold up for you?
It's stupid, but it's funny. I still laugh at the gags. I mean, honestly, you know, you're not going into this expecting anything tremendously poignant or anything like that, but you know, you get to see F. Murray Abraham do a riff on, you know, Anthony Hopkins as Hannibal Lecter. Yeah. You get to see making fun of Lethal Weapon 2, which is something that should be done mercilessly and at every opportunity with the trailer, you know, where they go back to and you know, the love interest, you know, turning into Kathy Ireland just because she puts her hair down, the Basic Instinct spoof, and you know, like one of those things where it's like the whole is not as good as the parts of its sum. I'm purposely spinning that because it's like it at no point are you watching this and you're like, yeah, this is really with it. It is obviously just done as a quick one-off sketch movie. And some of the sketches fly and some of them don't. But the ones that do fly, you laugh at.
Yeah. You know, it's these movies are so weird to me. I mean, they really are, because they throw so many jokes up there in the effort of just like some of them hitting, that it's just bizarre how many don't work, and yet someone was like, this is, you know, like for example, like someone was like, you know what would be funny is if he were flipping through a magazine and a bunch of those cards that, you know, you stick in magazines fall out. Because, I mean, isn't it crazy how many of those cards are in magazines?
There you go.
So, like, wouldn't that be funny if, like a whole bunch of these cards fell out and there was, like, a pile of them on the ground?
And while that joke doesn't work, a couple of minutes later you're laughing because the shootout has happened and both the bad guy and the good guy come out from separate corners and start firing down the same aisleway, and then they look at each other and they realize they're supposed to be shooting at each other. And that's stupid. It's awful humor to an extent because it's lazy, but I will laugh at that 100% of the time.
Like, that was not a thing that I mean, you know, that I did not laugh at that. There were certain gags where I'm like when he goes into the trailer and then it's like a mansion inside.
Yeah.
I'm like,
what about the mandatory butt in the moonbeam walk?
I mean, like, I have to say, like, you know, I was watching this on the train while I was on the way to the baseball game, and I thought to myself, like, I wonder, I'm worried because, you know, if this movie is too comical and I'm laughing out loud too hard, people might think that I'm crazy, and that would be embarrassing. As it turns out, that wasn't an issue because I literally did not laugh. Like, I did, I mean, I literally did not laugh once during this movie. There were times where I was like,
wait a minute. See, the thing is, I don't want to, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and spoil the joke because you're really presenting an uphill battle here, but you didn't even laugh at Sam Jackson's punchline with Charlie Sheen when he's the valet parking at the crime scene.
What does he say?
He gives him a 20 as a tip, and Charlie Sheen looks at him and says, "You got anything smaller?" And Sam Jackson looks at him and says, "No." And so Charlie Sheen's eyebrow goes up and goes, "Got anything bigger?" And Sam Jackson looks at him and says, "Yes." And then Charlie Sheen furrows his brow and just walks off. It's a great, that's a great gag. That's fine.
You know, I mean, that's fine. I don't know. I don't know.
I have a very easy funny bone to hit, I guess.
I don't think it's about being easy. I think it's about being, you know, specific. Comedy is, you know, different types of comedy work better, you know, for some people than they do for others. I mean, you know, I've got an uncle who can't get enough of the Three Stooges, and I've like been at his house when like the Three Stooges are on, and he's like, "I'm just going to sit here and watch all of these until they stop showing them." You know,
you know what I think is actually a very good indicator of whether you'll like Loaded Weapon 1 or not. Okay, is that the guy who wrote and directed this also did Police Academy 3, Police Academy 4, and Police Academy 5. All of which are terrible movies, and 5 is just a complete train wreck. Like I actually remember seeing 5, and I was like, ugh.
"Is that the Russian one?"
That's Assignment Miami Beach.
Oh, okay.
4 is Citizens on Patrol, and 3 is Back in Training.
Okay.
But 3 and 4, I remember specifically, they're terrible movies, but there are gags that you laugh at in it, and Loaded Weapon 1 is a lot like that, and I think that whatever works about it has to do specifically with the charm that Sam Jackson has and Emilio Estevez has. And I think that being like, if you're a huge fan of the Lethal Weapon movies, more of the jokes work than don't.
Yeah.
And I think that, and I was a huge fan of the Lethal Weapon movies. And so a lot of the jokes in this really flew and still fly for me. And I think that the cameos are good. And I think that to get to why we even watch this whole thing, Shatner, like at the time especially, was like, it was shocking that he was so memorable about the role. Like when I think of Loaded Weapon 1, 100% of the time I'm thinking of Shatner's scenes because he's there and he's selling it. And I do think it was sort of like a rebirth of his career. It's yet another reinvention of him where he said, "I'm going to be zany comic guy now."
Yeah, Shatner definitely is good. I mean, he's, I'd say more than any. I was kind of like really, paying attention to his performance while watching this, but he was definitely the high point for me. And I thought that, even though he was given, kind of like garbage material, that he definitely, made the most of it. And he had like an approach to it, which I think, worked as well as it possibly could. And that he was really good in it. I mean, there were other things that I liked about it. Like, he was shot by Peter Deming, who is he's the guy who shot like the pilot for 24 and stuff like that.
Wow,
you know?
I didn't know that.
Like,
okay.
He's a legit action director. I'm pretty sure he shot Predator 2. Things like that. And you look at it, and it looks just like a Lethal Weapon movie. They play that end of it straight. It's not like they got cheap on the photography or anything. It and that helps to kind of like sell the jokes, because all this stuff is kind of like happening inside of the reality of those types of movies, which is really cool.
So I got a question for you. Like, you didn't even laugh at John Lovitz coming in after he's died, and they say, "What are you doing here? Weren't you dead?" He says, "Isn't this a sequel?" Like, that's funny.
I didn't laugh at that, but I was like, okay, that's a fine joke. I mean, there were some jokes where I was like, that joke is fine, okay. There were other jokes where I was like, oh my God, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? I mean, I liked most of the stuff with Kathy Ireland, and I thought that she was pretty good,
Yeah, she was.
And, Tim Curry, of course, is usually pretty solid in these types of movies. And Sam Jackson was really good, which, I mean, this is like very early Sam Jackson. Sam Jackson's career is very strange. And also like the roles that he plays, and I think kind of just the way that he's presented on screen, like everything that he does pre-Pulp Fiction, yeah, he seems like he's way older than he is in the movies, starting with Pulp Fiction going forward, right? Yeah. Like, it's he looks younger now than he does in this movie, you know?
I hate to admit why.
Why is that?
Hairline.
I guess that's it, right?
Hairline makes people instantly presume that you are older than you are.
I guess that's what it is.
Because my brother is 5 years older than me, and everybody always presumes I'm equal to or slightly older than him because my hairline is gone. And he still has his hair. And so people, but if I'm wearing a hat, I'm the younger brother. If I'm not wearing a hat, I'm the older brother. It's weird how that works.
That's why I always wear hats.
No, there you go.
Always wearing hats is probably why I'm bald in the first place. But
oh, that's an old wives' tale.
Okay.
That's not true. It's genetics, man.
I don't know. You say genetics, but I look at my dad and he's got a full head of hair.
No, so it's from the mom's side. Look at your look at your mom's dad.
I never met that guy.
Oh, well, I bet you if you found a picture of him, he was probably bald by the end.
Probably. Yeah. So, it's weird, Sam Jackson. But even the roles that he plays, you know, he's like, he's like an officer in the Navy in Patriot Games, you know, and I don't know.
Yeah, strange. Well, I mean, and he has a very pivotal role in Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Everybody hold on to your butts.
Yep. He's good in that.
Yeah, he is.
I love Sam Jackson. He's also, I think it's been fairly well established that as far as, you know, nothing other than movies that you're in terms of box office total, he is the highest grossing actor of all time.
It was many years ago, probably right around the Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown sort of timeline where, I actually said to a friend of mine that anything that Sam Jackson is in, I'm instantly more interested in seeing the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that holds true to this day. I mean, Marvel casting him as Nick Fury was 100%. I mean, it was because Nick Fury was reimagined and the artist drew him like Sam Jackson with an eye patch and all of that stuff. But Marvel casting him was brilliant because it instantly made me more interested. I was like, oh, Sam Jackson. Okay, I'll go see your Iron Man movie. Yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, and you know, I did love James Doohan's little cameo. You know, that was good.
That's pretty great. Worked.
I would have laughed at that if I was in a laughing mood. But
you're a tough crowd, man. That's all I gotta say. I'm an easy crowd. You're a tough crowd. I think that most people are gonna fall somewhere in between.
Perhaps. Yeah. I don't know. These types of movies. You know, I mean, I did just see Naked Gun for the first time, and I was like, I can appreciate that.
What? Naked Gun. There was one part in that. I remember the first time I saw it, I nearly choked to death because I was laughing so hard. I was like eating, I don't know, whatever snack it was. I was watching it on video, and that scene in Naked Gun where he walks off with his mic still hot and he walks into the restroom, and it's what everybody hears at the press conference while they're trying to talk about something serious. Yeah. I nearly passed out. I was laughing so hard at that. So maybe that's the key. Maybe that's the key is if you're, you know, I'm just easier to make laugh. There you go.
No, I don't think it's about that because there are things which I'm sure I would, you know, be rolling on the floor laughing about that you would think were you know, not at all funny, you know?
Probably.
Like Kevin Smith movies. Mallrats. There you go. Mallrats, I think, is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen.
Not fair. I like Mallrats a lot.
Okay.
I saw Mallrats in the theater, and I've been a big defender of it over time.
Oh, you were the guy who saw it in the theater?
I was one of two.
That's
cool. My friend Joey went with me, and because we used to see every single movie together. Like, if one of us was going to the movies, the other one was sitting. We actually saw Jason Goes to Hell together. We got a free ticket and then split the cost of the remaining matinee ticket. We saw it for $2 each.
Nice.
It was like Mystery Science Theater 3000. We were heckling that thing through the whole thing. But yeah.
Mallrats, because it only played for like a week because no one went to see it. I just saw a I guess it would have been like a 20th anniversary screening at the Music Box, and they had a 35 millimeter print. I'm like, this should be interesting. The print absolutely pristine, like it had never run through a projector in its life, because it probably hadn't, you know.
Well, Mallrats is so fascinating because of how much they cut out and overdubbed later to you know, mask over that, like the guy coming up to him in the parking lot and everything like that. It's like Mallrats winds up becoming a fascinating study in how editing can shape a movie later,
you know,
regardless of what you shot.
I'm so disappointed by this, but you know, that was the one movie of Kevin Smith's that he didn't edit himself, and he had always sort of wondered like what it would be like, you know, if he did get to make, you know, like a director's cut, if he did edit it himself. So when they were coming out with the 10th anniversary disc, he convinced Universal to digitize all of the dailies so that he could go back and do a frame one re-edit of the movie and make a director's cut, you know, using potentially alternate takes, alternate angles and everything. And he got started on it, and he got like 10 or 15 minutes into it, and he's like, it's pretty much the same movie. It's like, I didn't do a lot of coverage here, didn't cut a lot of stuff out really that I didn't mean to cut out. This is kind of boring. So he went to his producer, Scott Mosier, and he's like, how about you take over and we just stick in all the stuff that we cut out and make it like one of those big extended cuts, but not a director's cut, just like a weird alternate thing so that people can see what the original edit was like, you know, even though it's not a director's cut.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. And so you can kind of see that, but at the same time, I wish he would have stayed the course and cut the entire thing just to see what it would be like. But
it would have been an interesting experiment. But yes, Mallrats, it wasn't until later Kevin Smith that I really started to sort of fall out of.
Okay, so you're not, you don't think that, like, you know, Zach and Miri is hilarious?
Haven't seen it.
Oh, you should watch it.
He burned his bridge with me, Mike. We've gone over this how many times?
Which
he didn't
was the
just
movie?
Burn the bridge with me. He took a flamethrower to it, and then he bombed the ravine.
With which movie?
It's just a multitude of sins over time.
Okay.
Just
all right.
Sort of, things went wrong. But Loaded Weapon 1, I think that the point is, if you like stupid, silly humor, it works. If you don't, it's curious because you get to see Shatner doing his first big comic turn, you know, on feature film. So there you go.
I agree. Would I recommend this movie? No. But at the same time, as far as bad movies go, this one is incredibly watchable. If for no other reason, because for one thing, it's really short, but also kind of in awe of, I mean, like the whole time I was sitting there watching it, I wasn't bored. I wasn't like, oh my God, this is going on forever. I was like, the choices which they're making in this movie make no sense. And I'm absolutely fascinated by the idea that they would be like, that's a good idea. Let's put that in a movie, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes it. See, the thing is, I would not recommend this to all. I would recommend it based on the person's sense of humor.
Okay.
How well I knew their sense of humor.
Yeah.
And you know, if I would not recommend this, say, to my wife, because she would watch this and she wouldn't even make it halfway through, and she'd be like, why did you tell me to watch this?
Yeah. I'm with her in that sense, I think.
Well, I think it's fun. I think it's harmless, useless fun.
It is harmless and it is useless.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. But they weren't trying to make an Oscar winner. That's an important thing to keep in mind. They were just like, yeah, let's just do this.
Yeah, and trying to make an Oscar winner, admittedly, is probably a bigger sin, because if you think your movie's good and it's not, it can be way more boring than this.
That's true.
Yeah.
Very true.
So, yeah. All right. Well, it's been fun talking about Loaded Weapon 1 today, but that's not all we're talking about this week on Trek FM. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
You went back to like TV show land, not not into the Star Trek universe, you know.
They're talking about lithium crystals and not dilithium crystals, for example.
Well, lithium crystals, man, those things obviously will catch on fire and explode.
That's good.
Earl Grey.
You are putting me in the hot seat here because, again, not that familiar with the original series. So when you brought it up as...
Boo!
Jury number three, contain yourself.
To the journey!
Let's have some tea and watch the Waltons.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night, Kes.
Good night, Harry.
Good night, Chakotay. Good night, Joe Van Gogh.
Good night, Catherine.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. We'd like to thank our associate producers, Chris Steftenagle and Jeff Sutter. Thank you very much for helping us out, guys. If you want to be like Chris and Jeff, head on over to patreon.com/trekfm and become a patron of the network. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels along with all the great perks we have for you, including early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. If you want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter at TrekFM or on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Facebook is also where you'll find the Babel Conference. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and we'll come right up. John, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can go over to KesselJunkie.com and find me active over there. You can go ahead and find me over on the Nerd Party Network, co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations with Matthew Rushing, which is an esoteric Star Wars podcast. I'm co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. And I'm also co-hosting a little show called Great Shot Kid, also on the Nerd Party Network, that I co-host with a lovely chap who's very tough room with comedy named Mike Schindler.
Yeah. If you like this show, go on over there and check out that show, because it's the same exact thing as this show. We talk about the people who make Star Wars instead of the people who make Star Trek. And on tomorrow's episode, we're going to be discussing who we would pick to direct an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie, which may or may not get made.
And it gets rather spirited at a couple of points.
It does. It does. Mm. But I think on the whole, we're pretty much in agreement on
fairly
some things.
Fairly, yeah.
Yeah.
But where
yeah.
we're not in agreement, we're really not in agreement.
Perhaps. Yeah. So you can find me doing that. You can also find me on TalkFilmSociety.com doing Soderbergh 2828. And you can find me on CommentaryTrackStars.com doing Commentary Track Stars. And you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K. So that's it for this week. Next week, we're going to take a look at another Olatunde Osunsanmi movie and see what else he has up his sleeve with the feature film Evidence.